Well, Aubrey, I'd like to start out, if we could, with a race that's close to home for you. House District 49 covers much of East Orlando, including the University of Central Florida. And it's an interesting race because, in some ways, it's sort of a microcosm of the national debate between Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, in some ways, you could certainly say that it is. You have a community organizer who's worked for Equality Florida for some years since his graduation from UCF, versus basically a corporate businessman who's worked for several large corporations since his graduation from UCF. So, you know, with Joe Saunders versus Marco Pena. So, yeah, in some ways it does seem that it reflects maybe the national debate between the parties.
And you mentioned that you recently hosted both of the candidates. They came to speak to students in your Florida politics class at UCF. When they were there, did they pretty much adhere to their party platforms when they came to your class?
Yep, I think so. And they both stressed two things when they were at UCF. One, that they both supported higher ed and that they were going to fight to keep tuition affordable, because they both come from low-income backgrounds. And they also said they were going to fight for Bright Futures funding and to keep Bright Futures viable. So they both were, you know, and that was one of the things that we're both in agreement on. And they actually were both in agreement that the economy is clearly the issue that the state legislature needs to be concerned most about. But their approaches were a little different. Saunders said that he wanted to do more for small businesses in particular, and for instance, a small business incubator program at UCF. He thought that might be a great thing to expand throughout the state. Saunders also, again, because of his background with equality, gay rights, and that sort of thing, said that he thought that was also an economic business issue, because he said, hey, there's a lot of businesses that are from the north or from the western part of the United States that might be reluctant to relocate to Florida because they feel like gay people are not treated fairly. So he looked at that as part of the broader economic agenda as well. Pena, when he spoke in class about the economy and, you know, what he would do, he did sort of take this more standard Republican line of, you know, we got to keep taxes down, we got to keep regulations down, targeted incentives to particular businesses when it makes sense. So he did sort of take the standard party line. So again, it's one of those races where it does seem the voters have a fairly clear choice. I think both guys would do a good job, but as far as ideology and as far as how they would approach, for instance, trying to get the economy revved up, they would take different approaches.
Well, let's move on to another one of the House races here in Central Florida that I think is really interesting, and that is House District 29, where Representative Chris Dorworth, he's already been named incoming House Speaker, but he's facing, you know, a surprisingly tough challenge from Democrat Mike Cleland.
Yeah, and this is a race where, again, on paper, Republicans have an advantage. It's a district that has about an 8% registration advantage for Republicans. And, of course, when you have someone that's already the speaker designate, that means that they're going to draw a lot of money to the race because everybody wants to get in good with whoever they think is going to be in charge of the House, quite frankly. But it's turned out so far, I think, to be a more competitive race than people suspected, mainly because Dorworth's got some baggage. He's got some personal financial baggage. He's a developer, and like many people who are in Florida development, he's taken a bath financially. I mean, I think his house is in foreclosure. You know, he's got a negative net worth right now. And, you know, that's just he's just going through a very rough time. And, of course, the rap from Democrats and other people who are critical of him say, you know, is that somebody that we should have not only representing us, but also the head of the whole House of Representatives?
And, you know, it also, I think, brings to the forefront the whole question of this practice of selecting the incoming House speakers and Senate presidents years ahead of time.
Right. You know, of the many things that the Florida legislature does that don't make sense sometimes, I think that's one of the largest things that really doesn't make sense. What happens is you get a freshman legislator that gets into office, and as soon as they finish their very first term of their first year, they begin to go around to their colleagues and collect chits, as it were, basically saying, will you promise to vote for me to be Speaker of the House in five more years, assuming that I win around and assuming that our party stays in the majority. But that's the way it works. And I mean, it started off really since term limits is why that this has happened. And, you know, in the old days, they did used to wait a little while and they'd have to be around for a while. But now because of term limits, as soon as you get into office, if you have aspirations for leadership, you know, basically as soon as the first session is over, you got to start collecting promises because you know other people are doing it as well. And it's not a very good way, I think, to select a leader because you don't know how good they're going to be, quite frankly, after one term in office, not even one term, just one session, one less than 1 year in office. And it's just not a very good way to do it.
I want to touch briefly now on one more state House race that has become quite an unusual situation, and that's House District 42. Republican State Representative Mike Horner was thought to pretty much have that race wrapped up until his name came up in the investigation of a prostitution ring, and he dropped out of the race. Now, some observers think that the relatively unknown Democrat, Eileen Game, may have a good shot against the Republican replacement candidate, realtor Mike LaRosa.
Yeah, a very strange race indeed. Again, after the redistricting, this is a district that actually leans Democratic. It's about a 5% Democratic edge by registration. So you would have thought, okay, well, a Democrat should at least have a decent shot here. But quite frankly, because Mike Horner was very well known, he was an incumbent, very well known in the business circles there at the chamber, et cetera, everyone just assumed, okay, this is his race to win because he's going to get all the Republicans, most of the independents, and, you know, Democrats, just even though they have a small lead that in the registration, they're just not going to be able to win this. But then when this big scandal happened and he had to drop out of the race, you know, it really opens up an opportunity. And if I was to handicap this race, I'd say, you know, this is an excellent opportunity for a Democratic pickup, because basically Horner's name is still on the ballot. Although normally that might be good. The fact is, when you've had to drop because you've been named in a prostitution ring scandal, you know, the thought that your name's still on the ballot can't be helpful to LaRosa, who the votes will go for. You know, if you vote for Horner, they go for LaRosa.
And also, you know, when we're talking about House races, one of the most closely watched races is in HD 47, where former Representative Bob Brooks is running against Orange County Commissioner Linda Stewart.
Yeah, that's considered to be a very, very competitive race. Brooks, a former state representative. Stewart, of course, well known because of her time in local politics. Lots of money being spent on there. Clear choices for the voters. Again, I mean, you basically have a very strong rank-and-file Democrat against a very strong conservative rank-and-file Republican. This district is not, as I remember, it's very even, maybe even slightly Democratic. So Brooks is downplaying especially his very socially conservative record from when he was in office before. And of course, Stewart is playing up, you know, her party ties and her longtime service at the local level. So it's going to be a very tight race. Couldn't make a prediction on that one, quite frankly.
Another very competitive race, and another where a lot of money is being spent, is in neighboring House District 30, where Democrat Karen Castor Dental is running against Republican Representative Scott Plakin.
Yes, absolutely. And again, this is widely expected to be a very close race, which is one of the reasons why so much money has been spent. Both these candidates are considered quality candidates. You know, Plakin's already in this state house. But this isn't the same district that he was in before, so he is not necessarily known to most of the voters here. And Karen Castor Dentil, you know, comes from a political family. Her mother, Betty Castor, having served in statewide office and then running for another statewide office, U.S. Senate. So she has plenty of money and certainly knows political strategy.
And her sister's congresswoman.
And is a congresswoman over in Tampa, absolutely. So, again, voters in this district really have quite a clear choice. I mean, you have a teacher, Democrat, who's going to say, hey, we need to do more to invest in Florida's public education and not always worry about cutting taxes for businesses. Against Plakin, who has been a very conservative Republican, wants to keep taxes low, cut regulations on business, and really has pushed a lot of conservative social policies as well over his time in the legislature. So very clear choice for voters here.
Well, Aubrey, I want to talk about a couple of these state Senate races, too. And it's interesting that you brought up the issue of education in the Castor Dental versus Plakin race, because that seems to be playing a big role in Senate District 14 as well, where Democrat Darren Soto is hoping to move from the House to the Senate. And he's facing Republican Will McBride, who unsuccessfully ran for U.S. Senate a couple of times, 2006 and 2010, I believe. And unlike many other Democrats, Soto is a supporter of school choice and has gotten some funding, in fact, from groups that support the charter school movement.
Yeah, it is interesting. And the school choice issue is one that splits the Democratic base a little bit, because when you look at the polls, and a lot of surveys have been done on this, what you find is Hispanics and blacks typically favor, are more in favor of some sort of voucher system or choice system, primarily because they feel in many cases that their children and their communities are stuck in public schools that aren't as good, and they don't have the you know, the economic might to go move somewhere where the public schools are better. So on average, you know, of course, Democrats are not in favor of vouchers, particularly teachers unions, and just sort of rank and file Democrats. But among blacks and Hispanics, they are fairly popular. And Soto has, you know, taken a stand that he's in favor of more school choice.
Now, at least part of Senate District 8, a new district, overlaps with Representative Soto's former House district. Do you think that means, does he have more name recognition than Mr. McBride in the new district?
Yeah, I would say yes. I mean, because within that area, it's basically Osceola and then part of Orange and Polk. You know, he is probably more well-known. Even though McBride ran for statewide office, the fact is he didn't make it out of the Republican primary, and so therefore his name recognition is probably not as good as someone who has been around Osceola politics and been a state rep now for several terms. Altogether, again, you would think on the Democratic side they would feel pretty good about this seat because it's heavily Democratic and heavily Hispanic. But yet McBride, he's got access to money. He's been a good candidate in the past for Republicans. So, you know, it's not certainly not one the Democrats could take for granted, for sure.
Another Central Florida Senate race that I think is quite interesting is Senate District 8, covering Volusia County, as well as parts of Lake and Marion counties. You have two very well-known politicians, Representative Dorothy Huckel from Port Orange and Democrat Frank Bruno, who is currently chair of the Volusia County Council. And this is another race where a lot of outside money has been pouring in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is considered to be one of the premier competitive races for the Senate in Florida this cycle. The district, when it was redrawn, has about a 3% Democratic edge in registration, but it's fairly tight. And you certainly have two very well-known and what political scientists would say quality candidates, because they both have held political office before. They both know how to raise money. They both know how to organize campaigns, and they both have good name recognition going into this. So that is why you have seen, if you live anywhere in Central Florida, you have seen a lot of ads being spent on television. You've heard them on the radio. And if you live in that district, you've gotten a lot of direct mail pieces as well, you know, hundreds of thousands. In fact, I wouldn't be shocked if over $1 million is spent on this state Senate race by the time it's all over. I mean, and perhaps more than $1 million.
That's just an amazing amount of money for a state race, for a state, even state Senate.
Oh, absolutely. And it's mostly, you know, some of it is campaign money directly that's coming from the candidates themselves. But a lot of it is outside interest or the political parties themselves, but the Republican Party of Florida and the Democratic Party of Florida have been running a lot of ads. And, of course, quite a few of the ads have been negative, trying to, for instance, the Republicans have outspent currently Democrats a little bit. So you've seen a lot of ads hammering Bruno for his time as county executive in Volusia about, you know, maybe taxes going up or overall Volusia County having a higher tax rate than most counties or things like that.
And one of the reasons that these Central Florida legislative races are so closely watched and considered so important is because the outcomes here could impact the balance of power in the legislature in Tallahassee, or at least in the Senate.
Well, yes. And I might add, realistically, for the Democrats to take over the House, it would pretty much take a miracle. The Senate is, you know, Republicans still have a better chance of holding the Senate, but I think that's where Democrats have at least a shot. And really, for Democrats, realistically, it's even if they can't take control, it's about actually having a little more relevance. Because right now, Republicans are just so far ahead. It's like 28-12 in the Senate and maybe 81-39 or 80-40 in the House. Democrats really just can't stop anything. I mean, they just can't. But if they could gain two or three seats in the Senate, if they could take it over, that'd be better for them. But if they could just gain two or three seats in the Senate, maybe 5-10 seats in the House, they would at least be a minority party that could do something in the legislature, could have some roadblocks for the majority.
Because that 28-12 makeup that you mentioned, Republicans to Democrats in the Senate, that gives the Republican Party the supermajority.
Absolutely. And with a supermajority, basically, you can always vote to waive the rules. Democrats have no hope of overriding a veto. Not that there's probably going to be too much dissension between a Republican governor and Republican legislature, but with a supermajority, Republicans, like, really, they can just do anything they want and don't have to take into account almost any Democratic priorities whatsoever. And historically, in the Senate, they typically did, but this last 2 years, not so much, because they just had such a big lead.
Well, Aubrey, you know, I wanted to have you in to pick your brain about these state House and Senate races because you so much insight on these and there are so many really fascinating races. But while you're here, I can't resist asking you about the U.S. Senate race between longtime incumbent Democrat Bill Nelson and Congressman Connie Mack, the fourth. What do you see happening there?
Well, you know, for Democrats statewide, you know, Bill Nelson continues to be their go-to guy. I mean, he's the one Democrat they've been able to count on to say, hey, Democrats can still win statewide in Florida, and we're not a totally extinct party, quite frankly. You know, if I had to give odds right now, I'd say he has a decent chance of getting reelected and you know, keeping Democrats at least in one statewide office. It's been a strange race, though. It's been very low-key. If you go back 6 months ago, 8 months ago, most national handicappers said, okay, this is going to be one of the most important and competitive races. The whole U.S. Senate, control of the whole U.S. Senate could be at stake, and this is one of the races that could do it. And yet, neither candidate really revved up their statewide campaigns until just a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. You've seen some ads, but not a lot. So it's really been sort of a low-key race. There's been one debate. Just the other day, and that's it. And they're not going to have any more. So all that to say, though, I think that actually in some degree works to Bill Nelson's favor. He's the incumbent. He's fairly well known among voters. Democrats will all vote for him. And he, because of his moderate image that he's been able to project for many years in office, he usually does fairly well among independents as well. So Mack's got his work cut out for him.
The polls seem to have Senator Nelson up, but, you know, by I've seen some saying 10, some 5, and, you know.
Right, and there's been one or two that have been actually closer, but most have showed Nelson up. And who knows, you know, Florida has had some interesting election results, and polls are not always accurate. And so, obviously, as I always tell my students, you know, regardless of what you think might happen or what the polls show, you know, look at the two candidates, figure out who you think best represents your interest, and vote for him. If it's Connie Mack, you should vote for him. If it's Bill Nelson, then vote for him. And then that's why we have Election Day. We count the votes then, and we see who wins.
Right.
Well, and I might add also, you know, the presidential race could have some bearing on all the races that we've talked about, on even down to the state House and Senate races, but certainly the U.S. Senate race. And, you know, Connie Mack has long held that if Romney can win Florida, and particularly if Romney can end up winning by a bigger margin than polls might indicate, then Mack is all of a sudden in a much better shape because some coattails might help him. Conversely, you know, if Obama's able to hang on and repeat what he did 4 years ago and he's able to win Florida, then Bill Nelson's chances increase substantially, as do potentially a lot of other Democratic House and Senate races at the state level.
So the coattail factor really is a major component here.
It certainly can be. In many races, we do see presidential coattails extending down to statewide offices and state legislative offices. But it does depend on how big a margin of victory a presidential candidate has in the state. So quite frankly, in Florida right now, most people are still predicting, including myself, it's going to be pretty close. I don't know if Obama or Romney is going to win Florida, but whoever wins, I'm guessing that it's probably going to be by 3 or 4 points max. I mean, and probably less. Having said that, again, you know, coattails do help. If you get a bigger turnout for Barack Obama and a lot of Democrats show up, younger voters, minority voters, young women, certainly helpful for all Democratic candidates on the ticket. And if they don't show up, then, as happened 2 years ago, Republicans are going to have a very good night.